اللهم جنت من عند ساز جنازنا سلكايا سكسس ان ملتان لينا تزماي سيندر وين مها سوي چيتانيا منو بيستام ستپيتام لينا بوتلي سايام روپكدام ايام ندتي ساتنات من جگا بطور بسچا بی پسند نوبای بچا پتی چنم پامنه بیو بچی نیدن مرما Lord Shiva has just completed what? He drank the poison that was produced from? Yes. And on top of that, the mountain, Mandara, which was used as the churning implement, was the Lord Ajita. And below the mountain was? Korma. The Lord is Korma. And the Lord was empowering with the different modes of material nature the demigods and the demons to churn. So now chapter 8, Sukadev Goswami continued. Upon Lord Shiva's drinking the poison, both the demigods and the demons, being very pleased, began to churn the ocean with renewed vigor. As a result of this, there appeared a cow known as Sarabi. So after the poison was removed, then a cow, the Sarabi cow, was produced. O King Prickett, great sages who were completely aware of the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies took charge of that Sarabi cow. So who took possession of it? The sages. Why did the sages want the cow? Because the cow produced all the milk, the yogurt, milk and ghee, absolutely necessary for offering oblations to the fire. They did this just for the sake of pure ghee, which they wanted for the performance of sacrifices to elevate themselves to the higher planetary systems, up to Brahmaloka. So these sages had desires to elevate themselves. Does that mean that they were pure Vaishnavas? Clearly not. It means that they weren't. Because the pure Vaishnava's desire is only to please Krishna. And by Krishna's satisfaction, they are happy. Nothing else, no other desire. So they took the possession of the cow so that they could produce ghee. The demigods and the demons especially had no interest in the cow because they had no interest in the sacrifices and therefore they had no interest in the ghee. Thereafter, they continued producing because they weren't interested in poison, they weren't interested in the cow. They wanted the amrita or the nectar that would make them deathless. Thereafter, a horse named Uchaishrava, which was white as the moon, was generated. Bali Maharaj desired to possess this horse. And Indra, the king of heaven, did not protest, for he had previously been so advised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He told them, don't argue over the preliminary products from the churning of the ocean of milk. Remember what you want. Keep your mind fixed on what you want. As the next result of the churning, the king of elephants named Airavata was generated. This elephant was white, and with its four tusks, it defied the glories of Kailash Mountain, the glorious abode of Lord Shiva. So first poison, then Surabhi, then Uchaishrava, the horse that Bali Maharaj took, then Airavata, powerful Airavata. Thereafter, O king, eight great elephants which could go in any direction were generated. They were headed by Airavan, 8 she-elephants headed by Abrahma were also generated. Text 6. Generated thereafter from the great ocean were the celebrated gems called Stubamani. Stubaman. It doesn't say, but Indra ended up taking Aravata as his mount. So he ended up with a mount. He didn't take Uchaishrava, the horse. Then the Kastubamani and the Padmaragmani were generated. Lord Vishnu, to decorate his chest, desired to possess them. Generated next was the Parijata flower, which decorates the celestial planets. O King, as you fulfill the desires of everyone on this planet by fulfilling all ambitions, the Parijata fulfills the desires of everyone. Next there appeared the Apsaras, who were used as prostitutes on the heavenly planets. They were fully decorated with golden ornaments and lockets that were dressed in fine and attractive clothing. The Apsaras move very slowly in an attractive style that bewilders the inhabitants of the heavenly planets. Then there appeared the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, Rama, who is absolutely dedicated to being enjoyed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She appeared like electricity, surpassing the lightning that might illuminate a marble mountain, very effulgent. Because of her exquisite beauty, her bodily features, her youth, her complexion, and her glories, everyone, including the demigods, the demons, and the human beings, desired her. They were attracted because she is the source of all opulences. But actually, despite the fact that they were attracted, no one can possess Lakshmi Devi, because Lakshmi Devi is the exclusive property of Lord Narayan, and therefore Lakshmi Devi's name is Chanchal. Chanchal means moving from here to there, to there, to there. Someone wants to gain Lakshmi Devi, and by her grace she may come and present herself, good fortune, to a person. But nobody can keep good fortune continuously in this world. No one can keep wealth. Sometimes it comes, sometimes it goes. She is chanchal. But she's only steady when she is in her natural position of serving Lord Narayan. In Hong Kong, many years ago, when we used to go into the merchant shops, Indian merchant shops, they would undoubtedly have a picture of Lakshmi Devi there. And they would worship Lakshmi Devi. We'd see them the first thing in the morning. They would take out their incense and they would ring a bell and they would worship Lakshmi Devi and then Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva is Asutosha, very easily pleased. Then they would worship their cloth, and then last but not least, they would worship their cash register. But Lakshmi Devi was always worshipped, but never Narayan, because the conception was that if I please Lakshmi Devi, she will benedict me with wealth. First of all, that's not devotion at all. That is business. I please you and you give me something. Devotion is causeless. It's not after anything. And Lakshmi Devi is only really to be used in the service of Lord Narayan. And therefore, when the devotees, they don't have an aversion for Lakshmi Devi. Rather, they see Lakshmi Devi as very wonderful in Lord Narayan's service. I once heard Prabhupada name a devotee, I think it was on a tape, I heard this many, many, many years ago, Ramaranyan. I think it was Ramaranyan. And he told him that previously, Sita Devi, or Lord Ramachandra's eternal consort, the goddess of fortune, Sita Devi, she was taken away by Ravana, a powerful personage, who wished to take Sita Devi, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, and enjoy her himself. He was smitten with attachment to her, and therefore he wanted to enjoy Lakshmi Devi, and he took her from Ram. And what was the result? The result was his destruction. So Prabhupada said that your job, as Ramaranyan, is to, he said, before there are so many, there is Ravana, but now there are so many Ravanas who are trying to take Lakshmi Devi and use Lakshmi Devi, or the goddess of fortune, for their own pleasure. And your job, he said, Prabhupada said, was to regain Lakshmi Devi for the use of the service, in the service of Lord Narayan. So this is a very dangerous thing, just like imitating Lord Shiva and drinking poison or taking intoxicants means one's death. So similarly, what happened to Ravana shows us that we should be very careful of using Lakshmi Devi properly, using Lakshmi Devi or fortune in the service of Lord Narayan. Everything should be used in the service of Lord Narayan. We should not be averse to wealth or opulence. Vairagya-vidya-nija-bhakti-yoga-siksharaka-meksha-eka-purusha-parana-sukrishna-chaitanya-sriradhari-kripambudya-yastamaham-prapadye. Means detachment, knowledge and detachment, not shukha-vairagya, not pushing everything away, but knowledge with detachment, using everything in Krishna's service, viewing the material world as Krishna's and seeing it and using it in his service. But one must be quite advanced to do that. Otherwise, one will tend to take Lakshmi Devi and in the name of using it in the service of Lord Narayan or Krishna, take at least some percentage for our own pleasure. And this tendency should be purified. So Lakshmi Devi, everyone was attracted to her when she was produced. The king of heaven, Indra, brought a suitable sitting place for the goddess of fortune. All the rivers of sacred waters, such as the Ganges and the Jamuna, personified themselves, and each of them brought pure water and golden water pots for Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. The land became a person and collected all the drugs and herbs needed for installing the deity. The cows delivered 5 products, namely milk, yogurt, ghee, urine, and cow dung. And spring, personified, collected everything produced in spring during the months of Chaitra and Vishakha, April and May. The great sages performed the bathing ceremony of the goddess of fortune as directed in the authorized scriptures. The Gandharvas chanted all auspicious Vedic mantras, and the professional women dancers, very nicely danced and sang authorized songs prescribed in the Vedas. The clouds in personified form beat various types of drums known as mridangas, panavas, murajas, and anakas. These are different types of drums. They also blew conch shells and bugles known as gomukas, and played flutes and stringed instruments. The combined sound of these instruments was tumultuous, very auspicious instruments, creating auspicious sounds, creating an auspicious atmosphere during the Abhishek of Lakshmi Devi. Thereafter, the great elephants from all the directions carried big water jugs full of Ganges water and bathed the goddess of fortune to the accompaniment of Vedic mantras chanted by learned brahmanas. Well, thus being bathed, the goddess of fortune maintained her original style with a lotus flower in her hand, and she appeared very beautiful. The goddess of fortune is the most chaste, for she does not know anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here we will now see Lakshmi Devi looking for the person who is her perfect match. Now, this will come in a moment after everyone recognizes her position. The ocean, which is the source of all valuable jewels, supplied the upper and lower portions of a yellow silken garment. The predominating deity of the water, Varuna, presented flower garlands surrounded by 6-legged bumblebees drunken with honey. Vishwakarma, one of the Prajapatis, supplied varieties of decorated ornaments. The goddess of learning, Saraswati, supplied a necklace. Lord Brahma supplied a lotus flower, and the inhabitants of Nagaloka supplied earrings. Thereafter, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, having been properly celebrated with an auspicious ritualistic ceremony, began moving about, holding in her hand a garland of lotus flowers, which was surrounded by humming bumblebees. Smiling with shyness, her cheeks decorated by her earrings, she looked extremely beautiful. Her two breasts, which were symmetrical and nicely situated, were covered with sandalwood pulp and kumkum powder, and her waist was very thin. As she walked here and there, her ankle bells jingling softly. She appeared like a creeper of gold because she was very effulgent. So she held the garland of lotus flowers in her hand because she was going to present that to the one she will choose to be her partner, her eternal partner, her husband. While walking amongst the Gandharvas, Yakshas, Asuras, Siddhas, Charanas, and denizens of heaven, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, was scrutinizingly examining them. But she could not find anyone naturally endowed with all good qualities. None of them was devoid of faults, and therefore she could not take shelter of any of them, because Lakshmi Devi means fortune can only take shelter of someone who is faultless. Because if someone has a fault, they will improperly use their fortune. So who is faultless? She was looking for that faultless person who she could present herself to for his service and pleasure. The goddess of fortune, examining the assembly, thought in this way: someone who has undergone great austerity has not yet conquered anger. Someone possesses knowledge, but he has not conquered material desires. Someone is a very great personality, but he cannot conquer lusty desires. Even a great personality depends on something else. How then can he be the supreme controller? She was looking for the Supreme Lord because Lakshmi Devi's natural position is to be in his service. Here's Prabhupada's purport, short purport. Here is an attempt to find the supreme controller, or Ishvara. Everyone may be accepted as an Ishvara or controller, but still such controllers are controlled by others. For example, one may have undergone severe austerities, but still be under the control of anger. By a scrutinizing analysis, we find that everyone is controlled by something else. So here is the understanding that if I become angry in an unwanted fashion, that means that I am not controlling anger, but anger is controlling me. Or if I am lethargic, that means that lethargy is controlling me. Or if I am greedy, that means greed is controlling me. So if something is controlling me, that means that I am not the supreme controller. So she was examining, Lakshmi Devi was examining everyone's qualities, everyone's attributes, personality, to try to understand who that supreme controller was, because that was her natural position, to be subservient and under the control of the supreme controller. So no one, therefore, can be the true controller but the supreme personality of Godhead Krishna. This is supported by the Shastras. Ishvara Parama Krishna, the supreme controller, is Krishna. Krishna is never controlled by anyone, for he is the controller of everyone. Sarva Karana Karanam. Text 22, Lakshmi Devi's discriminations continue. Someone may possess full knowledge of religion, but still not be kind to all living entities. In someone, whether human or demigod, there may be renunciation, but that is not the cause of liberation. Someone may possess great power and yet be unable to check the power of eternal time. Someone else may have renounced attachment to the material world, yet he cannot compare to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, no one is completely free from the influence of the material modes of nature. Prabhupada's purport. The statement, Dhamman Kvachit Tattaram Nabhuta Soridam, is very important in this verse. We actually see that there are many Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Buddhists, and religionists of other cults who adhere to their religious principles very nicely. but are not equal to all living entities. Indeed, although they profess to be very religious, they kill poor animals. So is that being equal to everyone? Is that being gentle? Is that being kind-hearted? Do we think that we can really be religious without being kind-hearted and equal to all living entities? Does it make sense that if God is the Father of all living entities, and every religious path basically accepts that, that everything comes from God, everyone comes from God, and life is life after all, everything alive comes from God, that to see one child of God in another way, in a cruel way, in an envious way, and to see another with love, is that equality? Is that true religion? Is that soft-heartedness? Is that pleasing to God? Is the Father pleased when all the children are treated well, or just some of them discriminatingly? Such religion, Prabhupada says, that discriminates in that way, killing the poor animals, has no meaning. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.8 says, Dhammam svanustita pungsan vishvakshena katasyad nukpadiyad yadari radim pratim yadi ratim shrama eva hi kevalam. One may be very, very expert in following the religious principles of his own sect, but if he has no tendency to love the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his observance of religious principles is simply a waste of time. One must develop a sense of loving Vasudeva. Vasudeva savamiti samahatma sudulava. The sign of a devotee is that he is a friend to everyone. Suridam savabhutanam. A devotee will never allow a pure animal to be killed in the name of religion. This is the difference between a superficially religious person and a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We find that there have been many great heroes in history, but they could not escape from the cruel hands of death. So here is a change of topic. Even the greatest hero cannot escape from the ruling power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead when Krishna comes as death. That is described by Krishna himself. Mrityu savaharas chaham. The Lord appearing as death takes away a hero's so-called power. Even Aranyakashipu cannot be saved when Nrisimhadeva appeared before him as death. One's material strength is nothing before the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So who is that supreme controller? No one wants to die, but everyone is forced to die. Therefore, death is the unfailing potency of the Lord. He appears to everyone. People may not accept the authority of God, but everyone accepts the authority of God in that form, whether they like it or not, whether they want to or not. So if everyone is being controlled by death, that means that they are not the supreme controller. And therefore Lakshmi Devi kept looking. 22. Someone may have longevity, but not have auspiciousness or good behavior. Like a tree has longevity. There are redwood trees in California that live thousands and thousands of years, 5,000, 8,000, 10,000 years. So although people worship longevity, longevity or long life itself is not wonderful. What happens if one's long life is full of suffering only? Is that wonderful? No. So someone may have longevity, but not have auspiciousness or good behavior. Someone may have both auspiciousness and good behavior, but the duration of his life is not fixed. Although such demigods as Lord Shiva have eternal life, they have inauspicious habits like living in crematoriums. And even if others are well qualified in all respects, they are not devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sukadeva Goswami continued, in this way, after full deliberation, the goddess of fortune accepted Mukunda as her husband. Because, although he is independent and not in want of her, he possesses all transcendental qualities and mystic powers and is therefore the most desirable. The supreme controller, the supreme opulent, the supreme powerful, the strongest, the most wealthy, the most renounced. He's not in need of her even. Famous, wealth, fame, strength, knowledge, renunciation, and beauty. And so beautiful. This is Bhagavan. So she understood that here is the Lord, Mukunda. Approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Goddess of Fortune placed upon his shoulders the garland of newly grown lotus flowers, which were surrounded by humming bumblebees searching for honey. Then, expecting to get a place on the bosom of the Lord, she remained standing by his side, her face smiling in shyness. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Father of the Three Worlds, and his bosom is the residence of Mother Lakshmi, the Goddess of Fortune, the proprietor of all opulences. The Goddess of Fortune, by a favorable and merciful glance, can increase the opulence of the Three Worlds, along with their inhabitants and their directors, the demigods. Oh, that's purport. According to the desire of Lakshmi Devi, the Goddess of Fortune, the Supreme Personality of Godhead made his bosom her residence, so that by her glance she could favor everyone, including the demigods and ordinary human beings. In other words, since the Goddess of Fortune stays on the bosom of Narayan by his chest, she naturally sees any devotees who worship Narayan, because they are worshipping his feet, and therefore she can see him because she is situated upon his chest, as the Srivats, the golden hair upon the chest of the Lord is Lakshmi Devi, the Goddess of Fortune. When the Goddess of Fortune understands that a devotee is in favor of devotional service to Narayan, she is naturally inclined to bless the devotee with all opulences. The Kamis tried to receive the favor and mercy of Lakshmi, but because they are not devotees of Narayan, their opulence is flickering. It comes and it goes, it's chanchal. The opulence of devotees who are attached to the service of Narayan is not like the opulence of Kamis. The opulence of devotees is as permanent as the opulence of Narayan himself. 26. The inhabitants of Gandhava Loka and Charna Loka then took the opportunity to play their musical instruments such as conch shells, bugles, and drums. They began dancing and singing along with their wives. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the great sage Angira, and similar directors of universal management showered flowers and chanted mantras indicating the transcendental glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the demigods, along with the Prajapatis and their descendants, being blessed by Lakshmi Devi, by Lakshmi's glance upon them, were immediately enriched with good behavior and transcendental qualities. Thus they were very much satisfied. O King, because of being neglected by the Goddess of Fortune, the demons and Rakshasas were depressed, bewildered, and frustrated, and thus they became shameless. Next appeared Varuni, the lotus-eyed goddess who controls drunkards. With the permission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the demons headed by Balimaraj took possession of this young girl. Interesting how these two verses go. Because the demons were attracted by good fortune, Lakshmi Devi. But good fortune is not meant for the demons. So when one who has a demonic mentality doesn't get good fortune, where does he take his shelter? Intoxication. So therefore they were satisfied being blessed by the lotus-eyed goddess who controls drunkards. So they take shelter of intoxication, which gives the illusion of well-being. Lakshmi Devi gives well-being, but intoxication gives the illusion of well-being, while actually awarding only degradation, misery, and what's the opposite of well-being? And don't say unwell-being.
Misery.
Misery.
Misfortune.
Huh? Misfortune, misery, so many things like that come. O King, text 31. So be satisfied with intoxication. And the devotees, they want true good fortune. And how do they plan to get good fortune? By pleasing Krishna. And if Krishna is pleased, then naturally the goddess of fortune is pleased. And who is the supreme goddess of fortune? Does anyone know?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Who?
Srimati Radharani.
So Narottama Das Thakur says, if you chant Krishna's name, you will get the mercy of Srimati Radharani. And if you chant Srimati Radharani's name, you will get the mercy of Krishna. So what did the devotees chant? Should I choose to chant Radha's name or Krishna's name? Yes, we chant both. Hare Krishna. O Lord, O energy of the Lord. Actually, O energy of the Lord. O Lord, Hare Krishna. Please allow me to serve you. And the devotees think that is the greatest fortune. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamani mama janamani janmanishware bhavatad bhakti ahitakita. I don't even want liberation. What to speak of janam dhanam sundarim, wealth, fame, followers, to be enchanted by beautiful verses of poetry, subtle enjoyments like that, or women, or anything. They think the supreme fortune is to be serving Krishna. So much so, they say, I don't care where I take birth. I don't even want liberation. Let me take birth again, but allow me to always serve you. Allow me to always serve you, that remember you in service. So after this point, what will happen? So many things were generated from the churning. O King, Sukadeva Goswami continues, thereafter, while the sons of Kasyapa, both demons and demigods, were engaged in churning the ocean of milk, a very wonderful male person appeared. He was strongly built, his arms were long, stout and strong, his neck, which was marked with three lines, resembled a conch shell. His eyes were reddish, and his complexion was blackish. He was very young. He was garlanded with flowers, and his entire body was fully decorated with various ornaments. He was dressed in yellow garments and wore brightly polished earrings made of pearls. The tips of his hair were anointed with oil, and his chest was very broad. His body had all good features. He was stout and strong like a lion, and he was decorated with bangles. In his hand, he carried a jug filled to the top with nectar. This person was Dhanvantari, a plenary portion of a plenary portion of Lord Vishnu. Savaya Bhagavata Shakshad Vishnu Amsa Amsa. Amsa Amsa, a portion of a portion. Sambhava. A portion, Amsa Amsa. He was a portion of a portion. He was very conversant with the science of medicine. Indeed, he is the personage in charge of Ayurveda, and wrote the Ayurveda Shastra. And as one of the demigods, he was permitted to take his share in sacrifices. We'll read the short purport of next, after the, reading the next verse. Upon seeing Dhanvantari carrying the jug of nectar, the demons, desiring the jug and its contents, immediately snatched it away by force. They didn't play by the rules. This is what they were planning to do all along. Here is Madhvacharya's, Prabhupada's purport, which has a comment of Madhvacharya's to text 34. Sri Madhvacharya remarks, Tesham satyat chala, chala artam harir dan vitariya vibhu. Samato pyasaranam tu svahastaramuchad sudam. Dhanvatari, who was carrying the jug containing nectar, was a plenary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But although he was very strong, the Asuras were able to take the jug of nectar from his hands. So now, they had worked so hard, demigods, demons, everything according to the Lord's plan. He was helping in every way, above, below, empowering, carrying. And now what had happened? The demons had the nectar, the amrita, the ambrosial beverage that will free them from death, and the demons had it in their possessions. When the jug of nectar was carried off by the demons, the demigods were morose. Thus they sought shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. That's what the devotees do when difficult times come. They seek the shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always desires to fulfill the ambitions of his devotees, saw that the demigods were morose, he said to them, "Do not be aggrieved. By my own energy, I shall bewilder the demons by creating a quarrel among them. In this way, I shall fulfill your desire to have the nectar." So now he was going to, the Lord not only had done everything, he was going to save the day. O king, a quarrel then arose among the demons over who would get the nectar first. Each of them said, "You cannot drink it first. I must drink it first. Me first, not you." Prabhupada's purport. This is the symptom of demons. The first concern of a non-devotee is how to enjoy his personal sense gratification at once, whereas the devotee's first concern is to satisfy the Lord. This is the distinction between the non-devotees and the devotee. The non-devotee and the devotee. Essential point, the essence of Bhagavad Dhamma or Bhakti. What it means to be a devotee means it means to satisfy Krishna. That is the desire. In this material world, since most people are non-devotees, they regularly compete, fight, disagree, and war amongst themselves. For everyone wants to enjoy and satisfy his own senses. And even when there are so many little wars going on, so many ethnic wars going on, and people fighting and other people, but if you look closely what the issues actually are, you'll find more than any other issue, it's financial. Who's going to get the resources of the place? It comes in the garb of one thing or another, or even ideology, but almost always there's a financial reason that's motivating everyone, because money means Lakshmi Devi, and everyone wants Lakshmi Devi, willing to fight and kill for Lakshmi Devi. This is the demonic mentality. Therefore, everyone wanting to enjoy their senses and thinking me, 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 me first, me first. So therefore, of course, there's fighting, such competition. Cutthroat competition. What a phrase. Cutthroat competition. Cutthroat. That means someone will slit your throat, kill you, to gain advantage and to gain the enjoyment that he wants. Therefore, unless such demons become Krishna conscious and are trained to satisfy the senses of the Lord, there could be no question of peace in human society or in any society, even that of the demigods. The demigods and devotees, however, always surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord. And thus the Lord is always anxious to satisfy their ambitions. While the demons fight to satisfy their own senses, devotees engage in devotional service to satisfy the senses of the Lord. The members of the Krishna consciousness movement must be alert in regard to this point, and then their preaching of the Krishna consciousness movement will be successful. So what point must devotees be alert to? Yes, that this should be the prime consideration, to please the Lord. and let the Lord deal with our desires. Easy or difficult to be like that? That is purity. That is purity. So the demons were fighting. Some of the demons said, all the demigods have taken part in churning the ocean. Now, as everyone has an equal right to partake in any public sacrifice according to the eternal religious system, it is befitting that the demigods now have a share of the nectar. So were these good demons wanting to be fair? Probably not. O king, in this way, the weaker demons forbade the stronger demons to take the nectar. They were just trying to put obstacles in the way just to stop them, because the stronger demons would drink everything and not leave them anything. And you see this when there is a big revolution in some country. Everyone is united to fight the enemy, the powers that be. But as soon as they rip down the government and gain control themselves, what's the first thing that happens? They begin to fight amongst themselves. Who's going to be in power? And the weaker ones will say, we should share it equally, because they know that if there's no sharing, they're going to lose everything despite their hard struggle. Prabhupada's short purport. Desiring to take the nectar, those amongst the demons who are less strong spoke in favor of the demigods. The weaker daityas naturally pleaded on behalf of the demigods to stop the stronger daityas from drinking the nectar without sharing it. In this way, disagreement and trouble arose as they forbade one another to drink the nectar. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who can counteract any unfavorable situation, then assumed the form of an extremely beautiful woman. This incarnation is a woman, Mohini Murti, who is most pleasing to the mind. Her complexion resembled in color a newly grown blackish lotus, and every part of her body was beautifully situated. Her ears were equally decorated with earrings, her cheeks were very beautiful, her nose was raised, and her face full of youthful luster. Her large breasts made her waist seem very thin. Attracted by the aroma of her face and body, bumblebees hummed around her, and thus her eyes were restless. Her hair, which was extremely beautiful, was garlanded with mallika flowers, very fragrant flowers. Her attractively constructed neck was decorated with a necklace and other ornaments. Her arms were decorated with bangles. Her body was covered with a clean sari, and her breasts seemed like islands in an ocean of beauty. Her legs were decorated with ankle bells. Because of the movements of her eyebrows, as she smiled with shyness and glanced over the demons, all the demons were saturated with lusty desires, and every one of them desired to possess her. Prabhupada's one-sentence purport. Because of the Supreme Lord's assuming the form of a beautiful woman to arouse the lusty desires of the demons, a description of her complete beauty is given here. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Churning of the Milk Ocean. So the next chapter is entitled The Lord Incarnates as Mohini Murti, a form of bewilderment. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
Who named all
these personalities who came from the ocean? Who named them? Asurgi, for instance. Somebody must have called Asurgi. Somebody must have named.
Yes. Wasn't me. Was it you, Bunky? No. Sitaram? Graham? No. Anyone in this room? No. That you should write one letter to Krishna. Say, who has named them? Sometimes they have eternal names. They already have the name, but yet they're named with their eternal names.
This is the first time they were mentioned.
Maybe.
They follow the Asa's time.
She's saying when he compiled the book.
Yeah.
But this is already from the Puranas.
Who wrote the Puranas?
Who wrote them? Bunky, I think. No, he's not that old. That's true. Maybe you did write. No, you didn't. Any other easier questions? But we can see the demigods have the amrita, or eternity, eternal deathlessness in their hands. But because of their desire to enjoy on this level, they're going to lose it. Okay, we'll stop. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Mohini Murti ki jai. Krishna takes, he's taking so many forms so to make this pastime work. He's, the difficulties, at every stage difficulties occur, and he always comes to the rescue. So perhaps there is an important lesson for us to learn, especially for the devotees, because this is all taking place in the on one level, the struggle against the demonic forces, and we all have those demonic forces in us too. We want to be devotees in service, but there's also opposition in there with other desires. So if we struggle and take shelter of Krishna, then Krishna will help. And life is like that. You follow something for, and then a great catastrophe seems to happen, and then by Krishna's grace it's resolved. And then each time, this is what we are to learn, that we should take shelter of Krishna, because his hand is in everything. His hand is in everything. That was some of the early purports yesterday. We read about that. How Krishna's hand is in everything, and that's the difference between the devotees and the demons. The devotees see Krishna's hand in everything, and the demons see, oh, this has just happened by chance or accident or my misfortune. So therefore, the devotees, seeing Krishna everywhere, can actually be peaceful in this world, because they have no desire other than to please him. So let us all become inspired to be devotees. Hare Krishna, thank you. So, if Krishna allows, next Wednesday we shall continue with this fascinating pastime.